Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 598, Return to the Blue Lagoon.
Just where we wanted to return to.
How could you not? How could you not? So before we...
Have you seen the first one?
Sadly, I have. Now. So before we get to all that, let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Crystal O'Keefe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. And yes, my wife is joining us since these movies are so pervy. We thought we should have a female voice.
Well, what a great date night.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
It's fun for the whole family.
Especially with the kids here.
Did you feel like an audience back in 1980 watching this these beautiful films?
No.
So before we get into the movie itself, shameless plugs. I forgot to do them last time. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, you find us. While you're there, be sure and subscribe so you never miss an episode. Of course, check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, which is called the League of Show Sharers, and you can also become a League of Show Sharer member by sharing an episode. People who were kind enough to share an episode this week: Ryan Terry, Bianca Gardner, Ronnie Castle, Matt Neglia, Lane LeVanway, Jeff Michael, Carl Clarkson, Gabriel Lugo, Chris Valls, Chris Sanders, Travis Tewitt, Tammy Sherman Powers, Chris Williams, Heather Sachs, Ralph Tribble, Julianne Jordan, Brent Smith, and Chris Magic Man. So thank you very much for supporting the show. And another way you can support the show, Patreon. Patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month you get all sorts of bonus content and you help out, and we appreciate that. So there's all that. Let's dig in to Return to the Blue Lagoon.
So we talked a little bit on the last episode about how the Blue Lagoon, the original, is our first misbegotten original movie in our series of misbegotten sequels.
Yeah, it was pretty rough.
Technically, if you go critically, and although it isn't, there aren't as many reviews of it, technically, this sequel is still misbegotten. The original Blue Lagoon had what, like a 9% on Rotten Tomatoes?
It had a 9% on Rotten Tomatoes. This Return to the Blue Lagoon would qualify for the 0% project.
Because it only has 30 reviews, so right. Clearly it wasn't seen as widely. It has a 0% compared to a 9. I will say right now, that is complete BS. This movie is so much better than the first one.
And I think the problem you run into is that it's still not good, but I do think it's better than the first one. But
yeah, comparatively, there's no way. I mean, we'll get into it more, but talk about the leads, the chemistry, the acting, the plot of the movie.
There is so
much more to enjoy. I mean, I watched this movie all the way through, was fine. I mean, I was captivated by it just fine. I mean, it didn't lose my attention after especially watching that first one. But that first one was slow and it was creepy and it was just... It was all spectacle, or what they tried to present as spectacle, at least for the ocean stuff and then whatever they were trying to get you to look at the other rest of the time. But there was nothing to the movie. I thought they made so many interesting choices and different choices and went a different direction, which actually made the characters more interesting and developed. The plot was more interesting. So, I mean, this movie's way better.
Yeah, and I know this movie is technically classified as a sequel, but it's really more of a remake.
Yeah.
It's only... I mean, the connective tissue is pretty tenuous. I mean, I know behind the screen, there's a lot of people from the first one that return to make it. But from a storyline standpoint, it's basically just a pretty simple, lazy plot device to put two people back on the island and call it a sequel. But it follows all the same beats, even though there's more story to it.
It's done less creepily.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if there wasn't that connective tissue, this is basically Evil Dead 2.
Yeah. I think that's
think
fair.
About it.
Yeah. Totally.
Evil Dead 2 is not a sequel. It's a remake. It's called Evil Dead 2, I guess, so you know it's another Evil Dead movie.
Right.
But Sam Raimi didn't have the money to do what he wanted to do with the first one. And even though the first Evil Dead's great, Evil Dead 2 is the movie he wanted to make. So that's why you get Ash comes back to the cabin. It's not like any of them remember what happened before. There's different characters. It's a remake.
Right.
This is a way to tell the same story, but to do it better, which I agree with. I mean, not that I read that, but I'm seeing it as you're telling the story of two young people coming through maturity on their own on a tropical, beautiful island, and they tell the story much better.
But ironically, you know, with Evil Dead 2, he's got more money. They don't. This has a $3 million budget, which is less money 11 years later than they had for the original. I'm looking at the box office. $3 million box office, but it had an $11 million budget. Although adjusted for inflation, I don't know that that's probably radically more. But
what does that say about society? Because it was less pervy, less people went to go see it?
I think that's exactly it. I think it wasn't. They didn't have it. Didn't have the stigma around it that people had to go see it, and,
which is what I was saying about the first one. When I was like, when you were like, "Oh, if they'd have made it a less pervy, younger people could have gotten in."
They did,
and I was like, "But they wouldn't have gone." Like, and here's one. It's still rated R, and there's some nudity.
No, I thought this was PG-13.
Is this PG-13?
This is PG-13. That's what I'm saying. You were right. This is exactly what you said about the first one.
Oh, I didn't realize
they made a PG-13 version of the first movie. It's like basically a soft reboot. It's the same story, but told better, but two people on an island growing up, whatever. And it's PG-13, so anyone could buy tickets to it. You know, the parental guidance, whatever, suggested, whatever, so anyone can get the tickets. And it's essentially the same idea of beautiful people, same island, at least for part of it, but audiences weren't digging it. You know, they didn't turn up.
And I will also say, you know, it's 11 years later. Like, it's not like this is a franchise people were clamoring for. You know, I did not realize that this was PG-13. I guess because it's, you know, it does have nudity in it. There, I mean, I know you can technically do nudity in a PG-13 movie, but I also feel like it's been so long since I've seen any that I just kind of forgot, because, you know, and it really is still creepy because she's 15 in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's not a body double. I mean, that's her.
Yeah.
But you also don't have nearly the amount of nudity that you did in the first one to necessitate.
Absolutely. But you're still seeing a 15-year-old naked, but not near to the frequency of nudity in this one is far less.
I think the thing that really sets it apart, and while still on paper, I know that doesn't sound good and it's not something that I'm defending or anything like that, but this movie handles the nudity as far as them being kids that don't know anything and they're stuck on an island and they would have to craft their own clothes. This handles it so much more tastefully. She has a top on almost the entire movie.
Which is
what I was saying about the first one. You didn't have to have her naked. It's a movie. I get that they're kids on an island, whatever. So you make it in your movie, because you're writing the script, that she makes a shirt. I mean, it's not that hard. She does it here, and it works fine.
I agree. Yeah. I definitely agree with that. I felt like they did a lot of scenes that could have been pervy better. Like, a lot. They did that throughout the movie.
Yeah.
I definitely agree with that.
Because the story is still about two teenagers maturing without an adult component. And I know this movie, again, that's one of the changes I think is better and more interesting, but for the most part, them going through puberty and adolescence without any influence from an adult or the outside world. So I still think that's the story they want to tell. And therefore you do have to have younger people involved, at least to be believable. But in telling that story, the way that they covered her up with a top almost the entire movie made it so much better to watch.
Well, interestingly, they started with older characters. So I don't know if we want to start at the beginning and tell the story. Sure.
Yeah, so it opens with the closing scene of the first one.
Ish.
Did they change anything?
Oh, my God. They changed so much. I was so irritated and confused about this.
Yeah, so interestingly enough, the guy who says, no, they're asleep, that's the same actor. They bring him back, which is odd.
So he was there.
So he, yeah. So, I mean, it's just like it's just a weird thing that they kept. But yeah, that they bring him back. And except this time, they're like, oh, nope, they're dead.
Okay, but wait. First of all, there is some woman on the boat that was never on the boat in the end of the first scene.
Yeah.
Second of all, the boat ends up, the people, and she has a little girl, which, again, did not exist at the end of the first movie. And this kid that just got rescued from this goddamn island is going right back.
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me? Like, that is the worst story ever.
Yeah. If you've ever seen Lost.
Well, I hated Lost.
Don't question people going back to an island that almost killed them.
You know, it's funny that, so this is, really lame, awful, lazy retconning, right? Like if you...
See, that's not fair because in the second book,
they do the same thing.
Yes. This follows the book.
The book does the same thing though. I thought I read that the first book ends with them saying they're sleeping, but the second book picks up and does the exact same thing and goes, the first line of the sequel in the book is, no, they're dead.
Yeah. I just mean that it's not the movie. Like, they're following what the book does. I think the first book in the movie was leaving you hopeful because they didn't want to.
Yeah.
The only reason they did that is so that you're not bummed out after seeing this movie. But to have a storyline, then the second book does the same thing. So they're really picking up the same way. And so I just mean, I don't want to be like, yeah, this movie's stupid because they did it. It's like, well, that's...
No, that's where I was going, is that the book did the same lazy, stupid thing. Yeah. And that he didn't want to continue that story, but he wanted to continue a story. So he's just like, no, they're dead. But from there, this bears... no resemblance to the book at all.
That's what I read, and why it's pretty much just a remake of the first one.
Because the book is he was more interested. The author was more interested in exploring the idea of what was going on with the indigenous people of the South Pacific Islands, and so he was using that story as kind of an entry point, and it isn't the same quote unquote romantic tale of natural love.
Gotcha.
But the book does the same lazy thing of just completely ignoring what came before it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think in the book and the movie wanted a happy ending. They didn't want the reader or the viewer to be bummed out. And then they said, we want to make another book/movie. So, we're going to now tell the story we wanted to tell, but instead of, if they would have ended the first one like that, you wouldn't say it's lazy. You'd be like, well, that's how it ended. It's only because they did that happy ending.
Right.
That they, there was the story they wanted to tell didn't involve the first two. Right. And now I think a really, really interesting story would have been the fish out of water, would have been, they grew up on this island.
Yeah.
Let's bring them to civilization and follow the same Richard and Emmeline's story in San Francisco or London or wherever you want to take them in society. And then, you would have gotten some tropes. I mean, we've seen it a bunch of times, but I still would have liked to have seen it from, I mean, that's Tarzan essentially, right?
Yeah, it's definitely Tarzan. Yeah.
But that would have been a more interesting story. But to give them credit, they do change a lot of things, as opposed to just making a straight remake of the first one, they go and they change a ton of stuff. So the woman that Crystal alluded to. So there's a woman on the boat with her daughter. And so the way that they get them back to the island is, they rescue the kid, the parents are dead. And the reason Tom sent me an accidental LOL through Messenger, And I'm like, what are you LOLing at? He's like, oh, that was a mistake, whatever. And then I'm like, oh, I just LOL'd at the beginning of this movie because I seriously, when they retconned it like that,
yeah,
like they were rescued. Oh, no, they're sleeping. And the beginning of the movie is like, nope, they're dead. And then you see them in body bags pushed off into the right. ocean.
With their kids like, watching. Yeah, or the
we
kid.
Just, yeah. We just watched this entire movie and got to know these characters and they're rescued at the end and they're like, nope. And I just thought the way they disposed of them was like laughable. But anyway, once you get from there, you've got this woman and her daughter. And then of course, little Patty they've rescued, but because they don't know Patty, they call him Richard in this movie. The people start getting sick on this boat. And so even though they were just, or he was just rescued, now he's on this boat where everyone's getting sick and it ends up that they have cholera. So the captain sends this woman and her daughter, and now she's adopted Richard basically, and sends her off to the island so that they all don't get sick and die with the hope that they will be rescued shortly thereafter.
Yeah. The logic is like, well, that boat came from somewhere. So if we push it out to sea, maybe it'll go back to this island.
Like, I mean, I guess it's better than dying of cholera,
I guess. Right. Yeah,
like you have a chance if you right. get to work, you know?
Yeah.
So that's how they get him back on the island. But the major difference you have here is you have a loving, caring, educated adult with the kids. And so I thought that was a really interesting point because
I wouldn't even say Patty, Patty, the elder, he, in his own way, he was loving and caring. He just wasn't very capable, where she is definitely a more capable parent.
Well, and she lasts a lot longer.
And she lasts a lot yeah. longer. Yeah.
He took care of him. You know, to give him credit, he did. And I think it was my preconceived notions where I was creeped out and like, God, please don't let Patty be a creeper, right? And
right.
So,
right.
And he was very abrasive. He had nudie pictures and then he was going to spank them. You know, I mean, like he was a rough individual,
right.
And he didn't seem very caring, and I was worried for them, but he did keep them alive until he passed away. But no, the
20 minutes later.
Yeah, exactly. So the big difference, though, is that she's with them and raises them, and she educates them and teaches them how to be civilized to an extent to where even though they didn't have the tools, they made them. They crafted spoons and they had a dinner table and ate civilized, and she educated them. They spoke so eloquently, like when later on, jumping ahead just for a second, when they are found and discovered by people, they think they're natives, and then they speak very well, and they're surprised by and they're shocked by how well they know how to interact. And so I really liked the idea that now you have these two people stranded, but they are educated, and even about their bodies, like they ask about why they're different. You know, why does, what are the character names in this one? It's Richard and then, oh, Lily. Okay.
Lily
instead of Emmeline. Okay. So they're asking questions like kids would do. They're curious. Like, why does Richard have that between his legs? And why does she have this? And it's like her seashell or conch or whatever they, but they're, it sounds weird, but you know what I mean? From a kid's perspective, they're trying to come up with nicknames and ways to describe it. And she's uncomfortable because she's very religious and proper. And so she doesn't quite know how to handle that talk, but they have it, and they have it in ways that the kids understand. And they, there's nice moments where like the kids are like, oh, that's okay. So that's what I've been waiting to hear all day. Oh, it's simple. Like that's what it is. And I really liked those moments because you have their curiosity, but it also is nurtured by this educated adult that can teach them and take care of them. And so you have this whole different upbringing by these kids, and it just creates a different dynamic there.
I think it also made it a lot less creepy because because in the first movie, they're not explaining, there's not like a narrator. No one's explaining what these people are thinking, right? Mm-hmm. And so as humans, we end up making our own assumptions about why they make the choices they make. Whereas essentially, this woman that got created not only did all those things that you just said, but she also was a narrator.
Mm-hmm.
She furthered the story by explaining these things to them. So we didn't, as viewers, we didn't have to wonder what they knew, what they didn't know.
Yeah.
It was explained to us that she had told them these things. And so we knew what they knew and what they didn't know. And so I think that was a lot more comfortable as a mom to watch.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. That's, I mean, exposition through their education, which is not lazy because they had to be taught. Like it was the perfect way to get across, like you said, all that information, and we were able to see their education unfold. And so I thought it was interesting where you still have them going through puberty and having feelings for one another and all that, but it also is in a way that they understand things differently, and they're not making it all up for themselves. So it's a different story to be told. I'm not saying the first isn't interesting, because I think we all agreed that's the most interesting thing about the first, and I wish they told more of it rather than the gazing nature of the first. but this is a different story, and so it would have felt boring and like a retread if it was just like, oh, these two kids, and then they go, oh, I don't know why I have this funny feeling, and oh, you're a girl and I'm a boy. Like, they didn't have to. These ones were educated.
Right. They had some knowledge base, and mm-hmm. they also were a little bit more indoctrinated into Western culture. So they mm-hmm. they still celebrated Easter. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
So like, it also made more sense that they weren't as complete. They weren't as much of a blank slate as the characters in the first film were.
Yeah.
And I think these two leads are so charismatic. Like their chemistry is way, way better than the original two.
Did you recognize the guy?
I did.
Okay, I did too, but Tom didn't know who he was.
Charmed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never watched Charmed.
Like, as soon as I saw his name, I was like, oh my gosh. And actually, you know, we met him when we were at Comic-Con. Yeah. You probably did too, Kevin. And,
I interviewed him about this movie.
I thought you did.
I had never seen either of these movies, and I'm going into both these blank. And having seen the first one, especially relative to that one, it's like, these two are so charismatic. I thought their chemistry was believable. Like, when they're having fun together on the island, when they're sliding down and doing all this stuff, like, I really felt the chemistry between them. Mila Jovovich is so charismatic, and I think her acting is 100 times better. I'm not trying to knock Brooke Shields. It is what it is. I think as an actor, she's so much better. And I thought Brian Krause did a really good job too, as a naive character who's whiny and complaining, because, you know, he's still trying to figure himself out too. I thought it was leaps and bounds better performance wise.
Yeah, I mean, it's still not great, but it's I definitely thought this was better than the first movie. We both, when it was over, were like, oh, that was at least watchable.
Yeah.
Like,
the first
absolutely.
One I was cringing the whole time, and this one I was like, I actually enjoyed. I mean, I wouldn't say like, oh, this was a great movie. Like, that those words would never be
But
uttered.
It was entertaining, right?
It was.
Like,
it was.
This movie set out to entertain and did it, where you could watch it and be like, okay, that was a nice story. There were nice moments, and there were interesting moments, and there was some suspense and all that stuff. And okay, I just watched a movie, I was entertained. That first one is like a trek to get through. You're like,
and it's a train wreck of a movie just
it
because
is.
It's so
it's not,
skeevy. So,
I think it's really unfortunate that this movie was critically bashed by, even though it was by less critics, but the 30 critics who saw it and gave it that rotten rating. And also, I just want to say, for people that don't understand Rotten Tomatoes now, we should put a disclaimer out here. Rotten Tomatoes is not really a great way to review movies, okay? If you're wondering, okay, is this movie worth checking out? Should I spend $10 on it or $6 to see it at the theater? Whatever your reasoning is there, and you go to Rotten Tomatoes and it has a zero, then maybe you go, okay, I'll wait till home video, or I'll wait till it's streaming on Netflix, right? If you're looking at it from a critical perspective, or like, is it worth my time even for free or whatever, a pass-fail system isn't really fair, because...
Right.
Rotten Tomatoes says it's either 100% or 0%. It's either good or bad. So a movie that gets a 5.9 or a 5.8 on Rotten Tomatoes is a zero in their mind. So it's really not fair to call a movie a zero, because it's not a zero out of 10. It means it's a zero in the pass fail. Does that make sense?
It means every critic gave it a negative review, but there's a difference between every critic giving a movie a C minus and every critic giving a movie an F.
Precisely.
And we've stumbled into this with some of our 0% movies that we're like, well, that really what we've seen movies that we think are way, way worse, but it's just.
And we've seen movies we liked. Like, some of us have come out of this like, I really enjoyed that movie that got 0%.
Yeah.
So I just want to be clear that not everyone maybe understands that, because they're not critics and they're not looking at things like that. And a lot of people just go, oh, Rotten Tomatoes, zero. It must be unwatchable, but that's not really the case.
Yeah, like, I think if you're looking for a true gauge of a film from a collective consciousness standpoint, Metacritic is probably
Metacritic, yes, because that's
better.
Out of 100. So instead of going pass fail, if it gets a 2 out of 4, it gets a 50 out of 100. I think what's telling, just when I jumped to Rotten Tomatoes out of these 30 negative reviews, the third one going top to bottom, for example, because they don't all have ratings, this one says Return to the Blue Lagoon is neither campy enough to be howlingly funny or prurient enough.
Like,
I don't know.
Pervy.
Okay. to be provocative. So that's a negative review. She says that, and then it's a 2 out of 4. That's a. I mean, Right. It's not a zero. It's a two out of four.
Yeah, out of four isn't an F. I mean, I guess it is. It's a 50%. But for, you can't on a film scale, like it's not an F.
It's a C on a film scale.
Yeah.
Film scale is, you know, C is 70% in grades is a C. But in a film, a two out of four would be the equivalent of a C. Because if you just jump to, you know, C, D, F, I mean, there's zero. An F can be a one and an F can be a six.
Right.
On that scale. So anyway, I know that's a lot, but hopefully people made sense of what I just said. So this movie is not a zero by any means. Yeah. And I think it's unfair that it got a 0% even compared to that nine, because it is a better movie. They may not have had the award-winning cinematographer. It may not have been as artistic, but the story, the acting, the script, there's a lot of things that are better as a film in this movie. So getting back to the story, so the surrogate mother eventually dies. She gets sick. Did they explain what she was sick with?
Pneumonia, no. I think. She says it goes into her lungs, so I assume that was pneumonia of some sort.
Gotcha. So,
and then I guess the kids dig her grave? That's fun, right? Like that.
Well, you know, she's a religious woman, and she says, I want a cross on there, and I want it to read that I was, you know, and it's a nice moment. She's like, Sarah, mother of Lily, and she's like, I would also like it to say, even though I'm not your real mother, I would like it to say mother of Richard.
As a stepmom, that really got me. I'm not going to lie. Like,
seriously,
I was like, yeah, like, I get that.
Right? That's what I'm saying. Like, the first movie had nothing like that.
Yeah.
And you're talking about in the first 20 minutes of the movie, you had an emotional beat where she's like, I know I'm not your real mother, but I feel like I'm your mother. That's nice.
The first movie has so much tragedy in it, and it's all just a plot device to get them to an island.
To get them naked.
There's no emotion behind any of it in the first movie.
All tragedy, no emotion.
Yeah, that's why I say the writing is so much better in this. The acting is so much better, because you didn't even get one moment in the entire first movie that was what this does in the first 10 to 20 minutes. So
I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, so I'm glad we're on the same page, because I'm watching this like, man, this is not that bad of a movie. So they're 10 and 12 years old when they have to bury her. So as opposed to the kids being on the island younger with Patty and having and not having the education, they had quite a bit of knowledge. So that's why they – oh, and we should say that before she died, towards the beginning, like, they take shelter in a big storm, and their makeshift banana leaf shelter they make or whatever gets toppled over. And so they move further inland because they realize that the ocean's going to wash away their shelter and all that stuff. And they actually find the treehouse – that they built in the first movie. So you have that really nice house for them to live in. So they end up taking that over and they craft.
But that was
spoon.
Another emotional moment. I just want to point that out because Richard recognizes it and he goes looking for his mother.
Oh yeah, that's true. That is because he knows he's the only one that's been there and he understands it. Yeah. Good call. So they end up growing up in this house, but like Tom mentioned, they know Easter and they know Christmas. They have these makeshift holidays. The mom had crafted and taught them about spoons and etiquette and all the table manners and all these things. So they're living a very different life than Richard, the original Richard and Emily lived in the first one. And so it's an interesting story, more interesting story already. 6 years later, we move forward. That would put them at 18 and 16. So, you know, already not as creepy. I know that Mila Jovovich at the beginning of filming was 15. I don't know how close she was, but at least the characters are supposed to be 18 and 16. And they are just going through kind of the similar stuff with maturity. He's feeling attracted towards her. She's noticing her body's changing. And that's where you really get this is really the only one. I don't know if you'd call it gratuitous, because I still think it's handled more artfully than anything in the first one. It's not gratuitous, but she is topless where she's like in the mirror looking at her body, trying to measure, you know, how her body is changing. And I don't know what version you guys watched or whatever, but I mean, it's like cropped off pretty much at the nipple, like as far as her being naked.
Yeah, like it's more of a side boob thing.
Yeah,
than full on topless. So
right.
Like, yeah,
this is the most graphic thing.
Is there another version?
No. I read that on VHS, it goes down further.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I had what was on Vudu. So
yeah, and that makes it creepier. Yeah, I'm not saying any of us watched it on VHS. I just didn't know if like if you had a DVD and it was different or whatever.
Sure, sure, yeah.
But that makes it less creepy too, because even though this scene that's filmed more artfully, and again, I'm not trying to like defend any of the stuff on paper or whatever, but it's handled more artfully, and then they even recognize, they're like, yeah, it shouldn't show any of her nipple, like from the VHS. Like, we're going to crop that off for DVD and digital.
But you still get it later.
Is it?
Yeah. There's a scene where she's in the lagoon by the waterfall, and you see, and you, she has her top off, and then there's another.
Is it like really, but is it like graphic, no, or is it like,
I mean, they're out there. I don't know. What,
It's not like it's a sex scene graphic,
right?
But it's so it's very similar to the first one in that, like, there's nakedness, but right, it wasn't sexual nakedness. So okay, if that's what you mean by graphic.
Yeah, and then there's another scene later where she's wearing a white top and it's sheer once it gets wet.
Okay.
Leaves little to the imagination.
But overall,
there's
the
a lot less nudity. There is some nudity, that which is why I was surprised it was a PG-13. But right, but significantly, it's a lot. It's much. It's not near as lurid as the first one.
You don't feel like you just broke the law.
Right.
Right. And I mean, I would say 90% of the movie, or maybe 95% of the movie, she has a top on.
Oh yeah,
absolutely.
Totally. Yeah.
Which, like, is the difference with Brooke Shields. Yeah. She had a long wig on and they glued it to her chest.
Right.
But that's the only covering, and it's not like there wasn't any side boob or anything. Like, you know, they're just covering her nipples with the hair.
Right.
So the whole movie, you're having to, like, if you're watching this movie, you're being forced to look at her like that. And so
right,
this movie, yeah, Mila Jovovich has like a space, like a sports bra is what she's crafted, right? Like, it's like a bikini.
It's
a
what women would say is a bandeau, like it's a tube top.
Yeah. Okay. So it's like crossed over her from her around her neck to the top. So I just found the movie a lot easier to watch because you're not distracted by, you're not in your mind, you're not having to think, this is gross, why are they doing this? You could pay attention to the story and the characters, and you could still tell the story of adolescence without, you know, feeling like they were just like, yeah, pervs, come and look at this nudity.
Right.
Because that clearly was the intention of the first one.
Absolutely.
So anyway, they're doing their own thing. Richard, again, like I was saying, is getting these feelings for Lily, and he's getting frustrated because she's not feeling the same way. Now, they did set it up in the beginning where, as opposed to like Brooke Shields in the first one getting her period when she's bathing and then being freaked out and not knowing exactly what it is, and this one the mother had educated her in that whole sex talk, so she said basically you can't have a baby, like, you know, as a little girl she's like, I want a baby now, and the mother's like, no, you can't because you're not a woman yet, and then they get into the bleeding and all that. So at first she's like a little freaked out, and then she realizes, like, I read it in her mind from her facial expression, she's like, oh, I'm a woman and I can have a baby now.
Yes.
Is that how you took it? Like, she was,
that's exactly how I took it. Yeah.
She wanted a baby since she was a little girl, and she remembers her mom saying, no, when you're a woman, you can have a baby. So she's been pushing off Richard's advances, and she's not feeling that way and confused by everything. And then this is where she starts to change her pace, because she has been taught that once you have your period and then you become a woman, that the man and woman lie together. And again, that very innocent way they described it, was it the iguanas or what animal did they,
yeah, because he was talking about when you see the iguanas and you can't tell where one begins and
yeah,
the other.
Yeah. So I like that they had that, you saw the child's perspective, and again how she was scared to talk about it, and they're like, oh well, no big deal, we've seen that with the iguanas, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So she changed,
which I think it was a nice comment that a lot of times it's like those things are awkward because we make them awkward, and these
yes,
kids not knowing any better, where it's like, oh yeah, that happens, I know,
yeah, exactly, yeah. So again, the writing much better. So but before they get into it, you know, Richard's feeling very frustrated because he doesn't know what to do with all these pent-up feelings that he has, and she's pushing him away, and not saying that's any fault of her own, but he is frustrated. He's, when she's checking herself out for how her body's changing, he's like peering through the,
yeah,
the wall, which is definitely like a creepy locker room type, you know. But again, I'm not, it's hard to say, like, I know that it's not acceptable and I'm not condoning it, but also when you're two teens on an island
with no adult ecosystem to kind of explain to you, that's not cool. You know
exactly.
I mean?
Yeah. It's not played for creeps. It's not acceptable by modern standards, or if an adult was around to tell you not to do that.
Right.
But in this movie, you didn't go, oh, this movie's gross because he did that. It's like he's a teen not knowing. And even says, he's like, we used to be naked together all the time. They used to bathe together. He used to look at her all the time.
Well, there's a scene where they decide to push their beds apart. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And she says, it's different now. He's like, why? And she's like, it just is. So it's all explained, right? They're going through this adolescence, but they're doing it in a more educated manner, and they're communicating. And so they're learning and talking, and we're getting more explanation. So it's handled way better. And then flash forward to the next morning or another nearby morning, he wakes up with morning wood. And she's like, hey, come on, get up. You have to help me.
That was the one time I laughed during both movies.
Yeah.
Like, what happened to it?
It was the first time we laughed with the movie, not at it.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Right. But and it's one of those playful moments where it's like, yeah.
When he's like, I can make it go away when I want.
It's like that all the time now.
Yeah. I mean, come on. That's because, again, like Tom said, it's the same as having those conversations with kids. This movie is just tackling real life subject matter. This is stuff that happens, and they're innocent and don't know about this part of life, and they're just figuring it out. So this is where, because it's not done in a creepy way, you can laugh with it and you can relax and be like, okay, that's funny, and they're naive and all that stuff. So anyway, so he's frustrated still and is like, no, you know, leave me alone. He wraps the bedspread around him. And I guess because the sun had moved, why did she want to turn the bed? What was the reason for that?
I think that was around the time that she had become a woman. And so she was like, I think we should move the beds apart. You know, like it was just clear to both of them at that point that they had both changed.
Yeah.
But the bed was already at the other side of the room. And he just like, instead of turning the bed, he put her pillow on the other side. It seemed like she wanted to flip the bed.
I don't know. She said it. And
oh, she may want to look away from him or something, like maybe more privacy or something.
She was looking for privacy. That's the end result.
So she wanted him to move the bed more. And he basically like moved it by flipping the pillow to the other end of the bed. Like,
there you go. Know,
like how a kid would clean his room by sweeping things under the bed. Like he
moved,
flipped the bed by moving the pillow. Okay. So anyway, so there's that little awkward thing. So they're already getting they're having this tiff, just kind of like in the first one, how they don't really know what's going on with their feelings and they're getting all frustrated. He then goes off. Has he raced the shark yet at this point? I can't remember if that's before or after. Either way, at one point you see him check off shark, where he's racing a shark, and he's basically doesn't know what to do with all his raging hormones and his testosterone, and so he decides to go race a shark, and he's like, I'm the master of the island or whatever, which comes back into play later. But he gets frustrated at her at this point, and he ends up going to the other side of the island, and this is when he sees the ritual, and I think this is where we actually see the person killed, right? In this movie is where we see the cannibals actually, like in a ritual where they put the guy down and they take a stick or whatever at his head and like bash him with it.
Yeah, so, and you don't see it. It's just like a splash of blood. So you kind of just...
But was like that this one? I thought it was the last one.
I thought
one.
It was the last one too.
Was it? I thought he sees it in this one.
I remember thinking that the guy that they sacrificed, they put white paint on him, like they were sacrificing a white person.
Well, maybe also, not then. Maybe he just covers himself with mud and sees the guys. I can't remember. You guys... I'll take your word for it. Seriously. I just thought, but you see more of them either way, because in this one, at least, he sees them like he's going off to the other side of the island, and all of a sudden he hears the drums or the chants or whatnot. And so he ends up once again, covering himself in mud, but it's not to blend in. It's to like lay on the ground and blend in with the mud. You know what I mean? Like not blend in as a person, but he wants to blend in with his surroundings. And they go
camouflage.
Yeah,
camouflage, exactly. And so they go marching past him, and then he stumbles upon the head, the god figure thing, and that's where he sees the guy that he lets live, right? Because
he runs into a guy from the island, and they both kind of like give each other the nod.
So you've already got more interaction than the entire last movie. Because we heard them in the other movie and saw them maybe through some trees in the first one. And this one, we see the natives go past him, and then we see another interaction, and they actually like talk or communicate at least verbally to each other. And so the way Richard sees it, like he brought a spear with him and he was gonna like hold it up and like defend himself, and the native just looks at him and smiles and runs away, and Richard says, "Oh, I let him live, so it's okay." Like that's how he sees it later when he talks to Luke.
Yeah.
She's like, "Oh, he's gonna find us or whatever," and he's like, "No, I let him live, so we're good." Because
they,
you know,
they still like drastically underutilize it, which just like, why is this even in the movie? But it does get a little bit more treatment than the first one. But
well, I guess, but because it's like, at least you knew from the first one that they existed, and if they just didn't show them at all, at least, you know, at least there was some kind of interaction and display.
Totally, they had to acknowledge that there were other people on this island to some degree, because we know it's there from the first movie.
If
but
you just had like three people in this movie, it would feel cheap, because you would go, yeah, wait a minute, there's no one on this island. We know they're on the island and we don't see them. So I think they were forced to address them, and at least they utilized them a little bit better, like you said.
Yeah. Not much, but a little bit.
Right. So now he comes back and they finally hook up. So they just, she's, you know, she's more into him. Like, I think she's scared, like that he went to the other side and thought he could be killed by them. And she realizes that, you know, she loves him or whatever. Her feelings change and he's okay with that. And they hook up. And apparently, from what we learn later on in the movie, they do it and do it and do it. He's, yeah, like, we make all the time.
Well, I mean, they're teenagers and there's no one there to tell them no. So
right,
like it's did.
And there's nothing to do.
Right.
Right.
Which,
yeah,
I think is another clever line when he says, "We're never bored."
Right.
I mean, I know there's other things to do, but they're alluding to the fact that
they are.
Like, totally.
We yeah, made all the time. That's a clever line. So anyway, they're doing that, and they're now they have new activities and things to do. And so several months pass, and this is when a ship arrives, and you get these you get this captain with his daughter, and then a couple of Patties. We'll call them Patties because, you know,
yeah,
I mean, they're worse than him. I mean, again, to Patty's credit, we didn't see him do anything. He was just kind of skeevy, like dirty old man in the first one.
Yeah.
But he's got a couple of sailors that are nefarious characters. You can tell they're up to no good, and it brought back those feelings of when I was worried about Patty. Now with these guys,
right,
I'm like, this is not gonna be good. So they welcome them, and this is that scene I talked about earlier, which I really liked, because as opposed to them stumbling upon two kids that didn't have any proper upbringing or education, Lily talks to Richard. She's like, now remember what mother said, greet them with a firm handshake. And so the captain is doing that thing where he's like, you know, hello, I'm paraphrasing, but he's like, you know, hello, we come in peace or whatever. You know, he's like trying,
yeah,
to talk to him like that. And he's like, hello, how do you do? I'm Richard, and shakes his hand. And
well, I think it's funny. He's like, you know, stay back because we don't know if they're civilized.
Right.
And then Richard comes out and spells civilized to show how civilized he is. But I can't tell if the movie meant this as a joke or if
they
it
did.
Was a
he
mistake.
Spelled it a little wrong, yeah.
He spells it wrong.
Just at the end, but I like that, though, because
yeah,
they are civilized to a degree. They are civilized as much,
yeah,
as 10 and 12-year-old kids can be educated by a surrogate mother on Gilligan's Island. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
they're educated and civilized to a point. So I like that.
Yeah.
He's like, we don't know if they're civilized. And he's like, C-I-V-I-L-E-Z-E-D, whatever, you know, because it
he leaves off the E.
Right, yeah, it's a really nice moment to show.
The ED part, yeah.
Like, okay, they can spell. They speak proper English. They're not the brightest, but not the most educated, but we get it, right? So that
right,
was another nice moment that kept the script more entertaining. And from here, it's basically like, they're like, we're ready to come home, and these people are like, they're like, our water supply is turned bad or spoiled, and so we need to get fresh water. Will you let us on your island? And they're like, yeah, all are welcome here, we're ready to go home. And the captain's like, oh, okay. But you know, they agree, they're going to take them with them. But they take a few days to get their stuff together, get water and everything. But meanwhile, the main conflict comes, which again, there wasn't much conflict in the first one, which is why it was
right,
not interesting. This conflict comes that the daughter, who is very fancy and sophisticated, but a douche, right? Like she's trying to steal Richard away.
I hated that bitch.
Right, that's what,
yeah,
I'm saying. Like, she's the female equivalent
not happy
of a douche. Like, she
like,
is.
You get out of there.
Right. So she is like, she acts all proper and everything, but she's like, oh, I'm going to teach you guys how to dance. And then pulls Richard to her and does what they, for the time, were provocative dances.
It was the Victorian equivalent of twerking.
Right, exactly.
It was.
So the whole conflict just comes into that she's trying to, and it's not even like alluding to, she literally is trying to hook up with Richard when Lily's not around. So Lily, Lily at first is... she doesn't know how to be jealous. She doesn't even know she should be jealous. So I like that, that her naivete shows that she's friendly and she's welcoming to all, and she's not even thinking, she doesn't have a care in the world. The daughter of the captain says, is this your brother? And she's like, oh no, he's my husband. We were married on the island. And so she's very just naive about everything. But when the dancing comes and the daughter starts getting closer, she realizes that her intentions are bad, and she gets very jealous.
That doesn't need to be learned. Women connect the dots on that real quick.
I remember saying to the character, I said it out loud, I was like, yeah, you know that funny feeling you got? Yeah, you go with that instinct.
Totally. But I like, but to her credit, and again, Mila Jovovich is so charismatic, and I think she's so good in this role. Like, she's really, really likable, and you know, you would be naive when you grow up on the island with only you and your, you know, her now husband, but you and your other guy, and you're taught, you know, for a very small amount of time by an adult. But she hardly got into their birds and the bees talk. She didn't say, like,
right,
watch out for women trying to steal your man. Right.
Right.
She doesn't know. She lives with one other person, and they are now mating and together, and they're married by their standards. And you wouldn't even think, like, she sees the good in everybody, and that's what I like. She is innocent. That's the right word. She's innocent. She's not just naive. She's innocent. And I like that about her until it becomes obvious that the captain's daughter's intentions are bad. So anyway, they get them separated. So the daughter is out fishing. She says, oh, Richard's going to teach me to fish. So she gets them isolated, and she says, oh, if we kind of duck down under deck in this boat, we can kiss and no one can see us. And, Lily is bathing, and this is the scene I think you're talking about, where she's bathing in their, you know, the lagoon, the beautiful waterfall lagoon here, and one of the creeper first men or whatever of the captain's ship is watching her, and this is where it gets real skeezy, and she sees him, and she's like, what are you doing? And she tries to cover up, and I mean, it's scary for that character. I mean, he's gonna rape her if she doesn't get away, basically.
Oh yeah.
So it's a
It was weird the way they played it. Like, he's definitely like skeeving out on her, but he also wants that pearl.
He does, and I think that's the only way for the movie to save from being too indecent. Because
right.
I think the movie may have gotten an R rating if it went into that territory.
Yeah.
But I think the character's intentions were clearly that he was. You know what I mean? I think you can read into it.
He's
like, no one can hear you, right? She's not screaming like, no one can hear you when I steal your pearl. Well, if it's a euphemism, maybe.
I know, right? I was thinking that too, yeah.
But she screams and he's like, Richard, you know, he makes fun of her, which is terrifying that you have this adult male.
Yeah, it definitely plays like he's rapey, but then it shifts into this, like, he wants, like, she has this pearl that Richard had gotten for her,
I think it's trying to have it both ways. PG-13 rating, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think, Crystal? I mean,
I agree that, I mean, being a woman, it was absolutely a rape scene, like,
right.
On the border of it. And I think you guys are both right that it's like they wanted to tell that story as far as they could without losing the rating. Like,
right.
That's,
exactly.
They were headed down that path.
So they change it to, oh, where's that pearl? Because I meant to mention that earlier, but when they... she finds more Easter eggs than him, he lets her win so that he can give her a gift that they promised the winner would get a gift. And he dives down and gives her this pearl, which is basically like an engagement ring kind of a thing. It plays like that. And so he gives her this pearl and she wears it in her hair and this little leaf thing that she puts together. But she's always wearing this. And so the guy sees it earlier, Chekhov's pearl. And then he asks her, where is this? And she says, oh, it's back at the house.
And that right there shows you the difference between the first and the second one. Because in this one, it's Chekhov's pearl. And the last one, it would have been Chekhov's pearl necklace.
Oh, my God.
Yikes. So
it's funny because it's true.
Well, I wouldn't put it past him. It's pretty bad. So the first one. So now you've got this race against time where he's going to attack her and steal this pearl back at the house. Meanwhile, the captain's daughter is hooking up with him, but he's like, I said I would never hurt Lily. Like, she's my wife. This isn't right. He realizes that what they're doing, I mean, because he's innocent to a certain point. I'm not saying he shouldn't have known, but also it's not like he was raised knowing, learning all about monogamy and like, right. He doesn't really understand what it means. And so he's following his instincts. And I'm not saying this.
Those aren't Crystal, instincts.
Hear me out here. Like, Crystal is a guy. I'm not trying to defend his actions, but I think we can all agree he's a very naive, innocent character too, that doesn't understand.
And he's a teenage boy.
Yeah.
With hormones, right.
I feel like this is actually one of my favorite parts of the movie.
Which, yeah.
Because what ends up kind of not like getting him to think with his brain instead of his not brain.
She
says to him like, well, you guys aren't really married. Like, that doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah.
Like
he says to me, it does.
Or, right.
We're married. Like, I like that. That's again, another nice
and that got him out of that way of thinking. Like that was the moment that he realized that it was wrong. So like he was logical about it. And so that's, I agree
exactly.
That he was being a teenage boy.
Yeah.
He figured it out pretty quick. He was thinking with his Richard, but then he realized it was wrong and he got out of that situation. So he's like, Lily, you know, where are you? He wants to go find her because he knows what he did was wrong and he just wants to see her and make sure she's okay. And she hears him. He hears her screaming. And so he ends up going into the,
you know, I want to ask a question about the name Richard.
Yeah.
How do they know his name? His name.
Yeah.
Was Richard.
They rescued him.
I think he knows that his dad's name was Richard.
Could the kid even talk like that? The character you saw, that the child that was adrift on that boat, like, you never really saw him talk.
Right.
And so I, you know.
And then suddenly they're just calling him Richard.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. Is the captain still the uncle?
They didn't. Well, we don't know because
it didn't look like it
because
you don't see any reference.
That was my confusion.
Yeah.
I asked it in the first movie and I meant to ask it to lead into this.
It wasn't Mark Craig because they didn't have anybody on it with like wild Einstein hair.
Right.
Like, right. Well, no. We know the casting is different.
Right.
But do we know the characters are different?
They don't do anything to establish like.
That was why I got so frustrated with the beginning of the movie because they didn't make the connection.
Okay.
Like, they didn't have
because
somebody on board with wild Einstein hair to let us know that was the uncle.
Right.
Because he would know his son's name was Richard.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
And that would be the only thing like, oh, in memory, we'll name him Richard because we don't know his name. So that plays if the uncle is still in the story. Now, I thought it was just recasting because I didn't know. You know, I didn't know. Let's just put that. I have no idea.
I don't think they ever address him by that name.
They don't.
No.
So, like, I don't think it's recasting. I think it's just that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But gotcha. Anyway, so I don't know how they know it, but allegedly somehow, because the dad's name is Richard and the kid doesn't know what his name is, then they name him Richard. So what? So the creeper guy that's trying to steal her decorative pearl thing that she wears, he's trying to attack her, but Richard ends up going in. The bad thing about this is that Richard doesn't really know how to use a weapon, and this guy, as we saw earlier with Chekhov's rifle, he has a rifle, so he has no idea. And I think it plays really well again with his naivete, because when he does eventually get the rifle away from this guy, like, the guy's like, whoa, 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 and puts his hands up, and then Richard has it upside down and he's trying to poke him with it.
Yeah, he tries to use it as a spear.
So,
okay, but can we just pause for just a second when he gets grazed by the bullet? Was that not the craziest howl you've ever heard in your life? Like, I was dying laughing.
I laughed so hard.
That was the worst scream ever.
I know. That was bad. That was bad. Definitely. That's called overacting. And it certainly did happen when he got grazed. But again, I like how he didn't understand the rifle use. So even though he got it away, there was nothing he could do with it. And then the creeper firsthand was like, oh, well, okay. And so they have their little scuffle and doesn't he push him off the house or something? And he runs away into the ocean. I think that's how he gets away. Like, they scuffle, he falls out of the house and he runs away. The guys meanwhile shooting at him. Now, I don't know how much ammo rifles have, and especially at that time, but he certainly did have a lot of shots in that rifle.
Yeah, apparently he could load really fast.
1800.
He's a teenager.
No. This is a bad guy.
I mean, I'm thinking in the 1800s. Now, I'm no gun expert, and I'm guessing neither of you are either, but I don't
my
think
dad
it's not
did
like,
a lot of hunting with shotguns and it they never re- no that's not a thing.
Right but
they
like
didn't have
it's, not like, it's not like
automatics.
His rifle didn't have a clip in it like no. You would put probably a
yeah I'm honestly not sure because I'm thinking like in old westerns like the Rifleman remember the opening credits where mm-hmm. he would just be like and he'd like keep like cranking that thing down. I again know
that's
nothing about
true
guns.
Because you would like yeah you would cock it by crank I don't know yeah. how that works anyway this dude though but he
and this
got
would
off.
Have been the era like after the era of cowboys it like true. This movie opens in 1897 so at this point it's you know 1910 1911
okay
so
I mean
you know
at least okay so even if the gun can hold you know more than one bullet this is like the case where like a character in a movie has a revolver that holds six shots and then shoots 20 times.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally.
You know, like either way, this guy is shooting nonstop at Richard as he's yeah. like in the house. He shot at him and grazed him. He shot at him in the ocean, whatever. So he's shooting, he's missing constantly. And this is where Chekhov's shark comes into play. You know, to their credit, they did build up, they planted all these seeds throughout the movie for all yeah. these little things. So he ends up swimming, and we know that he can outswim the shark, and he ends up
which
trapping him.
Which is not a thing.
What's that? Oh, outrunning a shark. Sh- yeah,
nobody
I mean,
can do that.
No.
Like,
this
human
is movie.
Can't
this,
swim faster than
yeah, no,
a
no,
shark.
No. It's a movie moment for sure. Yeah. But he's the king of the island. He does the thing again. And so he gets to his rock in the middle of the ocean. And, of course, the bad guy is still swimming after him. And then we see the B-roll of a shark.
Right.
And we cut to the bad guy, and we see the B-roll of a shark, and we cut to the bad guy. I mean, the movie was done on a budget. I'm not going to pretend to say that this was, like, the best editing in the world or anything like that. But
and it really does come down to the editing, because the shark footage was done by the same people from the first movie.
Yeah, no, the yeah, and yeah. the shark footage looked great and everything. It's just, it's not like they had a guy with a fin for
right.
moments with the bad guy, and you were like, oh, he's approaching. It was more like, there's a shark, there's a guy, there's a shark,
right.
there's a guy.
Yeah,
and then
totally.
All of a sudden, the guy's like, ah.
Yeah, here's some so blood. It,
so, good guys are triumphant. That guy dies, and they end up saying, I mean, I guess they all make good, because the next scene, it's like the captain wants to leave it. Whatever, midday or whatever, and then don't they just do they
she's like I'm pregnant and she wants to stay on the island so they stay.
Yeah, they realize I mean I think it makes sense for the characters and their story. It's like they're never gonna fit in. It's the whole Tarzan. It's really just Tarzan,
right.
But I'm not gonna fit in with these people. We're gonna meet a million other of these first mate bad guys. We're not gonna fit in. We don't belong there. Let's stay on the island. And yeah, she's pregnant, so they're gonna have a kid, and that's their decision. And the movie literally ends with they have a child. Now
they
it's
have
a
baby
girl,
and just for old time's sake, we get some baby nakedness and just can't,
gotta,
you know,
gotta pay homage to that original.
Right, like it's like, hey, everybody loved the naked little kids. Here's some more.
Yeah. And, but
way to stick the landing.
But you know, it's definitely no worse than the first one, and it's that baby nudity that I guess you can get away with because
it,
you know,
it
in
is.
Movies,
but it's also like it's like you can get away with it, but why? Like there's a you could
well,
have
the
filmed
they
that.
Wouldn't have crafted a baby bikini. I mean, it's a newborn.
But like you, but there's other ways to show that they've had a baby without showing
okay.
you full on.
Either way,
naked,
though, it was
nakedness.
Not done. In, I don't think it was done.
I don't think it was lurid, but yeah, I also just think that like you could have accomplished the same thing in other ways.
I think Kevin's just saying it still wasn't as bad as the first one.
No, absolutely.
And
it was not
I,
as
and
bad
I agree
as the
with that.
One.
It
yeah.
wasn't. And it's I also just think that they did, again, the movie did a better job of explaining why they stayed on the island, because the first time they just like look at each other and they decide to stay.
Yeah.
But like this one actually put some things in place mm-hmm. that made you understand why they would not want to go to civilization. Like if that was my one
right.
experience with civilization and I had been living on this island just fine,
right.
I'd probably want to stay too.
Exactly. Yeah. They're only like they have one interaction.
Till you need to go to the dentist.
Or have a baby.
Right.
Like, I mean, they make it look like it's easy, but
you and this having a baby thing, like
dude,
it's so hard.
They can come out breech.
We've
they
seen
can
how this works. It's just bloop, 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 and the baby comes out. Easy peasy. Easy peasy-motomy.
Right? I mean, there's another story out here where the, you know, she dies in childbirth and then Richard's raising.
Which would
the
be the realistic one, guys. Right? The realistic one. That's,
oh, no,
that's
I know.
How hard it is to have a baby.
That's what I'm saying. There's like, there's a sequel in this that's more realistic where it's like, yeah, she dies and now there's a single father on a remote island having to raise a child. Like, I mean, that would be an interesting story. There's different stories you can tell with these same characters.
Yeah, but then they couldn't make it sexual. Or if they did, that's a whole different movie.
No, but okay, but what would happen?
And people think I'm the one who goes too far.
I'm just saying, if that was the point of this movie, which you both said it was, then they couldn't just make a sequel because it wouldn't have the sex.
The first one, though, this would be a sequel to the second, much better handled one. And what they would do is they would then have
the final chapter in the trilogy. You have Blue Lagoon, Return to the Blue Lagoon, and then you have Revenge of the Blue Lagoon.
Rise of Blue Lagoon. So they would have another lifeboat come, and this time it would be a guy with his son, and then that son would marry their daughter, and it would just go forever.
Oh my god.
This movie was way better, though. I feel bad for them because I like to go to the sources, and I couldn't even find the interview or the quote, but on IMDb trivia it says Mila Jovovich says this is the worst movie she's ever done. I mean, relative to other things, that could be true, but this movie's not that bad. I watched the behind the scenes when she was making this movie, and she was excited about it. She said it was a good movie. She was a very hopeful young actor saying, she said, I've got to do a good job. I watched the whole thing, and she's like, I got to do a good job. If they use a take I don't like, I still need it to be good. She was in it, and you could tell she was really good in this movie. It's a serviceable movie. This is way better than a lot of movies we've watched lately.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd watch this before Bad News Bears Go to Japan.
Yeah. That's fair. It was better than that. I mean, it's still not great. And I get why she would want to distance herself from this. Interestingly enough, when she was coming up as a model, she was often referred to as the quote unquote new Brooke Shields. So
you know who I always think is, who do you think of when you think of Brooke Shields?
I don't know.
Younger actress. Who do you think of?
I got nothing.
Denise Richards.
Oh, the eyebrows.
up, like, I think she was my generation's Brooke Shields.
Interesting.
I always think of Denise Richards.
Whereas my generation's Brooke Shields was
Brooke Shields.
And I was a girl, so I didn't care.
You know, I found an interesting thing about them filming on the island, and they were talking about how they had to cut this mile-long swath through the jungle so the cars and trucks and could get the supplies to where they were filming, and like and the people who lived on the island, you know, were showing them where to go and how to do it, and that the filmmakers were like, oh, like, we feel bad, like, we're cutting down all this foliage for over a mile so we can get from point to point, and the people from the island were like, oh, no, like, we get so much rain. They're like, that'll be back in 3 months. They're like, we didn't let you do anything damaging. Like, we cut this down, we go to where we need to go, and when we're done, it'll just all grow back, and it'll in like 4 months, it'll look like we never did any of this.
Did you read the thing about, and I don't know if it was for the first movie or this, but did you read the trivia that when they were doing their ritual, their cannibalistic ritual thing?
But that's an actual ritual from the, like, the dance moves and stuff.
No.
Not the cannibal part, but the dance moves were actually.
Oh, but they don't know what they were saying. Like, they never explained to them if it was like the real chant from a ritual,
they're
making fun of the cast and crew. Like, no one knows. So I think it was on a director commentary, and it's probably the first one. The guy's like, if anyone from that part of the world that speaks that language knows, write in, tell us what they were saying, because they let them just do
what
thing.
They do. Yeah.
Yeah, do what
but,
they do.
Yeah, but it was real indigenous people performing dances. They didn't just hire a bunch of actors and say, act.
Right, exactly. So it'd be funny if they were really just like making fun of them and not doing
their
ritual.
Great. I hope they were. But I will also say, like,
this movie should be rated X. This needs to be censored.
I was also relieved to find out that they were using actual native tribes, that it was, you know what I mean?
Otherwise,
that
it would have been super offensive.
Yeah, because when they first showed up, and it was just like, oh no, this is.
I know, I had the same thought.
And I was like, okay, well, I mean, it's still not great, but like, at least they used real.
It's not central casting.
Right. It wasn't the white guy's idea of what this would look like. So
exactly.
But anyway, there's a return to the Blue Lagoon. I don't think we will be returning.
I think this was a perfectly entertaining and serviceable movie. And I feel bad for the actors if this has been a scarlet letter on their IMDb or whatever, because I think they both had chemistry, and I think they did fine.
They both had great careers
When you see Brian Krause at Comic-Con, one of the things on his vinyl banner at his booth lists Return to the Blue Lagoon.
Yeah.
So, this was his big break. I mean, this is his first big movie. It may have been his first leading movie. I think maybe he was in some others, but it was his first big. I'll probably just tag the interview on the end of this because I talked to him about Blue Lagoon. But from my recollection, and I'll edit this if it's wrong and let him tell it, but I believe this was his first starring role. It got him his big break. He got to hang out with a gorgeous model, Mila Jovovich. I mean, this was a huge part of his career, and I'm glad that he owns it and puts it on there or whatever, because again, it sucks. As kids, these are 15 and 18 year old, whatever. These are teenagers, either way you cut it. And they got a 0% from critics on this movie. You know what I mean? Meaning whatever, negative reviews. And that's too bad for your first big outing, because they didn't deserve it. I think kind of like Brooke Shields didn't deserve a Razzie. They didn't deserve to get the hate for this movie.
I would agree. And I think, and I don't know that they really ultimately got all that much hate. I think this movie's more forgotten than anything. I don't think.
Well, the box office, it didn't deserve to make three on an $11 million budget or whatever. It was a fine movie, and it's sad that people saw the first one for the wrong reasons, and it was creepy intentions, whereas this one didn't have the controversy, so people didn't show up because this is the better story, right? So
I think it says a lot more about society than it says about these two people.
That's what I mean. They're the collateral damage, and that's a shame.
And just real quick, I'd like to talk about this sometimes, the top 10 grossing movies of 1991, just to kind of see what was popular in the same time frame. So coming in at number 10, City Slickers, $179 million. That's 1991.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Worldwide, right?
Worldwide, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Coming in at number 9, Hot Shots. Coming in at number 8, Cape Fear. Mm. Number 7, The Addams Family. Some of this is interesting because, like, I did not think, and these are worldwide grosses, but I did not think some of these movies were as popular as they were.
These are the movies I grew up with. These are in my wheelhouse. Hot Shots Part 2, Addams Family. I mean, these are, you know.
Yeah, coming in at number 6, JFK. Number 5, Silence of the Lambs. Coming in at number 4, speaking of movies Kevin loves for no apparent reason, Hook.
Oh, Hook is Spielberg's masterpiece. I will defend it until my dying breath. Hook is a great movie, especially a great kids movie. I could go on forever about it, so don't you talk trash about Hook.
Hook is awful. Coming in at number 3, Beauty and the Beast. Number 2, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Like,
holy
I had no
crap.
Idea
what?
That... That was a huge movie.
Yeah, I mean, I knew it was a hit, but I didn't know. And again, these are worldwide grosses. So,
every girl in middle school and high school knew that movie backwards and forwards. The entire, all of the music with it, like that was the perfect romantic movie for a teenage girl, right?
Did you
there.
Get a Kevin Costner butt shot in that movie or something?
I don't even remember. It was just like all romantic. I feel like you do.
You don't remember. Yeah. Uh-huh, Crystal.
You knew it backwards and forwards, but you don't remember if you see Kevin Costner's butt. Okay,
I've seen
better
butts than Kevin Costner.
Well,
So I totally don't know that at 43 minutes and 22 seconds you see Kevin Costner's ass. Totally don't remember that.
Yeah. So worldwide, that did $390 million. And then coming in at number 1, no shock if you know it came out that year, is Terminator 2 Judgment Day did a worldwide gross of $519 million, and that's not adjusted for inflation.
Holy
so,
crap.
Yeah,
there's a reason why that movie has been released on home video 7,000 times.
Yeah, and there's a reason they keep making sequels to it, even though they've all been pretty bad. So
I want to jump back real quick to number 3, Beauty and the Beast, which of course is part of the Disney Renaissance and a great animated film from them. Mm-hmm. There's a new documentary on Disney Plus called Howard, and it is the story of Howard Ashman, who of course is the songwriting partner of Alan Menken, and they did Little Shop of Horrors, directed by Frank Oz, which was adapted from the old Roger Corman movie.
Right.
And they adapted that into a musical, did really well off Broadway, ended up going to Broadway, and of course ended up doing the Frank Oz, Rick Moranis movie. But then they got hired by Disney, and they ended up making The Little Mermaid, Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast together, and they changed the way, I mean, those movies saved the company, their animation department, and changed the way that animation was done. They were Broadway guys. I mean
they turned Disney cartoons into Broadway musicals.
They're musicals. People don't understand that. There's people that grew up with Disney movies and they don't like Broadway. They don't like musicals because people singing out of nowhere, that's weird. But the medium of animation is something that they can wrap their head around because they're like, well, it makes sense. It's cartoon. It's not real life. So they got a whole generation and generations to come to be introduced to Broadway that would have never even watched it. And they changed that animated movies became musicals. And it is a fantastic documentary. It's so good. It goes all the way from childhood, interviews with his mother, sister, of course, Alan Menken, Jeffrey Katzenberg. I mean, all Disney people. It is so good. It's on Disney Plus. Definitely check it out.
Awesome. Well, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
You can find me at facebook.com/CrystalDOKeefe. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at ClipOutCrystal.
And this is Kevin. You can follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/TomOKeefe. Find the show online, facebook.com/RealSpoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. Wherever you're getting your podcast from, be sure and subscribe so you never miss an episode. And check out our Patreon, patreon.com/RealSpoilers. So that's it for this one. No idea what we're doing next week or if I'll be even be allowed to pick after this week.
Yeah, I told Tom his privileges may be revoked from picking these.
Understandable.
Misbegotten sequels, especially without ever seeing them or reading up on them. So
I'm just glad that there isn't a Hook 2.
Oh, okay. I will write Hook 2 so that we can talk about it.
So anyway, we'll figure it out and we will return. So until then, Amber's husband intercepts Giuseppe's letters.
Critics have absolutely raved about the Divine Comedy, which is the debut album by my next guest, who's soon going to be embarking on a tour of North America with the Crash Test Dummies. Please join me in giving a very warm welcome to Mila.
Reaching over life to life, feeling sugared skin. My poor baby kissed him so, too ashamed to lift his chin.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.